When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I would like to tell you a story. Knife Talk is sponsored by Evenheat, the manufacturers of the finest knife treat ovens available. Find your next heat treat oven at evenheat-kiln.com.
Welcome to Knife Talk. I'm Jeff Fader of Fader Knives, and with me as always is Craig Lockwood of Chop Knives and the beautiful Mareko Momasi of Momasi Fire Arts.
Ahoy, ahoy.
We're here to be three knife makers trying to make it in this world, and we're here to do a weekly podcast to answer your questions, talk about things of the day, and put some lead in your pencil.
Mm-hmm.
How's everybody doing?
Yeah, good. What's everybody been up to?
Ooh, lots. More hospital visits for me. When I have got time to be in the shop, I've done a few chef knives and something I've never done before. So I worked on a charcuterie knife.
And
that was a weird one because it's something you don't really see many of. So it was a case of going online to see what others had done, then do my own take on that, which basically ended up like one of my bread knives without the serrations. That's my take on a charcuterie knife.
Wow. Sure.
Thin and flexible. You're getting the flex?
Just about, yeah. Still quite rigid. So it was one of those things where I was thinking, do I want... Because if you think, you know, a charcuterie knife, it's going to be used in two ways. One is going to be on a big, big old ham to cut off slices.
Sure.
And the other, which is how we use them more in France here, is just for small chorizos, that kind of thing, to cut them.
Mm-hmm.
So in one way, I was thinking, maybe this just needs to have a bevel on one side, just so you can get some really nice, thin, straight-line slices. Or double beveled. So I made two, but the single bevel just didn't work out at all. So
yeah, it's too it directs the cut too much. From what I've understand from meat cutters, they like a flat 50-50 grind because that way it cuts where they want it to cut instead of any kind of weird steerage coming or going on because of an uneven bevel or a single bevel.
Meat cutters.
Meat cutters, that's what we call them. My brother was a meat cutter.
What have you been up to, Jeff?
Well, I've been crazy, and luckily for me, the return of the prodigal son, Carl Childs, my former intern's back. And that Carl Childs is my enigma. He's fantastic. He's this kid who was my intern last winter, and he did this senior project about knife making, and I was his mentor, and he really, I can't tell you why, but he really loved hand sanding. Like, he understood it. And it got to the point where when you talk to him, he's very direct. He's very thoughtful, but philosophical. You can tell that there's a lot going on in that mind. When he says something, he doesn't use words, you know, flimsily. He just he's very intense. So when he came back, it was really great. And the funny thing is he he's got something on it. He's got a car, a white car, and he's got a bumper sticker on it. And it's so not – I didn't think it was like him because I just generally think that bumper stickers are – I think they're awful. I'm not interested in what you have to say on the back of your car. And I always think that it's ridiculous and, you know, it just makes no sense to me. But he had this bumper sticker that I loved, and it said, "Honk if you don't exist."
Deep.
Yeah, it's super deep. So I was on the phone with my business partner, and I looked at that. I was like, "Tony – Carl's got a bumper sticker that says honk if you don't exist. I got to break his balls." So I went back into the shop. He's hand sanding. He doesn't say a word. He just hand sands. And I said, "Carl, you got to talk to me about that bumper sticker. And he goes, did you like it? And I said, yeah, I loved it. I hate bumper stickers, but I love that. And he says, well, I got it at an ashram. I said, an ashram? I said, do you go to ashrams? And he goes, well, you know, I've been to a couple ashrams. You know, an ashram is basically a monastery where you're, you know, you give all your worldly possessions away and you give up a life of, you know, being a monk or something like that. So I said, Carl, is this something you'd be interested in doing? Would you be interested in, like, staying at an ashram? And he just looks at me quietly. There's a big pregnant pause and he goes, depends on the ashram. And he went back to hand sanding.
How old is this kid?
He's like, he just turned 19. He's fantastic. He's thin, long, thin. He's very thoughtful, but it's like kind of like this strange Holden Caulfield with not so much, you know, yammering on.
He's been big on social media this week. Everybody wants a bit of Carl.
Yeah, I know. I've been telling him. He's all fired up. He thinks he's going to see. He got hit up all over the world. He got hit up by a lot of guys. He's all fired up.
He's got to keep that ego in check if he's going to be hanging out at ashrams.
He is perfect for an ashram. He's quiet and thoughtful. He's very efficient with his language and his words, and he's just. There's a lot going on in that brain that I'm a little afraid of.
He's the yin to your yang.
Oh, that's 100% sure. You know, the funny thing is I'm trying to kind of make him laugh every so often. I'll say something, I'll get nothing. Zero. I'll get nothing from him. But then he'll laugh at the weirdest stuff. Like I was making a sanding a deck, and I was using the countersink to drill into the deck so I could countersink some screws. And I was drilling, and I didn't put the countersink in tight enough in the chuck, and it just fell out. And he laughed. That was the funniest thing he'd ever seen in his life. I was like, I'm giving you my best shit, and all you're doing is laughing at a countersink falling out of the drill? He's my enigma. Leave him alone.
Mareko, what have you been up to? I've seen your stories. You've had a few failures this week, which you've been working through.
Oh, my God. I've had a few failures these last couple of months, but it's finally starting to come together. I've been really, like, whenever I make a mistake, I dial back my work. How fast I work, basically. So it's definitely stretched things out a little bit on this build, but they're coming together really nicely. It's a stainless steel Wootz chef's knife with a forged integral bolster. It's got a Koa Saya and a Koa handle. Everything came from the same piece of wood originally. I think I talked about it actually like last week. Split the handle off, sent it out to be stabilized. And it's all come together really well. And so the next thing is just I need to actually get Carl over to the shop to do some hand sanding on the stainless steel Wootz. I can't have him.
You know,
he's not far. It's only a couple hours.
You can't have him. You're in line.
But this Wootz is super wear resistant. So especially the stainless steel Wootz, and it's. You gotta put that elbow grease in it, get it done. But I do understand where Carl is coming from. Sometimes with the hand sanding, he just gets into a zone. It sounds like, and I kind of do the same thing, because the problem is the hand sanding sucks. But you gotta be really good at it if you're gonna set yourself up properly for the next step. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing I think a lot of people don't understand. But I'll get into that later.
Well,
just how hard the work is.
It is meditative, but you do have to have a degree of, like, for your brain, your mind, you have to have some like milestones so you know when you're going to be finished. Like, I get messages from guys about hand sanding. They're just like, well, I just don't know when I'm done. And if you create some milestones in regards to what you're trying to do, it makes it a lot easier. Like, when I used to run marathons, I needed to run the same course. So when I was at mile 9 or mile 10, I knew where I was in regards to the 24 miles. Like, if you don't have any milestones in regards to when you're changing grits and how you're going to change, it becomes, you know, you're exhausted because you just don't know how far away you are to the end.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
For sure.
What do you guys do when your hand's sanding? Do you listen to music? Do you, you know, what gets you going? I mean, maybe for Carl, it's Buddhist monks and their hymns. I don't know, but what keeps you in that zone?
Chance. He's doing chance.
Chance.
I listen to music. I listen to podcasts. Sometimes I listen to nothing. It depends on what mood I'm in. Lately, I've been listening though to a lot of books on tape and stuff like that. So it just helps pass the time more than anything. Because realistically, like, the hand sanding only requires maybe, you know, you got to be careful so you're not cutting yourself up on it. But, you know, 40% of your brain is available to hear stuff, at least for me.
Yeah, that's really the only time I don't have earplugs in is when I'm hand sanding, because it's, I'm against listening to stuff when you're on machines in general. That was something I learned from an old shop I was at. But for hand sanding, yeah, you can, you know, figure out a way to kind of get yourself squared away.
Yeah. Well, this week, I know we've had a bit of a change of a plan, haven't we? So something was going down, and that's changed in the last couple of hours. So we don't have a Jeff Investigates.
No problem.
Boo-hoo. But we do have...
Hey, man, can I ask you a question?
That's Morgan Freeman. You got Morgan Freeman.
What's
this
up, Morgan?
Time.
Morgan's back.
I can't believe you got him.
Well, the bar was set high with Jay-Z last week, but his lawyers have been in touch. He doesn't want to be used on the show anymore. So Morgan reached out, and we thought, hey, we'd give this guy a chance, you know?
Well, just to be clear, I got a little bit of hate mail from one person in regards to the too many, hey, man, can I ask you a question? And you know who you are. You got my number. I'm about to block you. We're going to not go as crazy as we did before, but we're trying to be mildly entertaining.
I got a lot of positive feedback about it.
Oh, like, you
everybody
did?
Everybody I talked to thought it was hilarious. Even though I was the one poo-pooing it the most last episode, I feel
well,
like.
Well, then,
everybody
with, that
loved
said,
it.
With that said, hey, Damascus Dave, you're out. It's over. We're not listening to you anymore.
Oh,
lose
DK.
My phone number. Oh, this guy, he's a good buddy of mine. I'm not going to go into it. He's a good buddy of mine. He's part of the Modern Forge team, but boy, does he have comments. So he started sending me messages. You got to cut it out with the jingles. Hey, guess what? If Mareko says we got a good response, we're keeping it going. So keep going on that jingle.
I love it.
Hey, man, can I ask you a question?
That's it. There we go. He's back, baby. All right.
Just before we kick off, you mentioned the Modern Forge then, Jeff. Tell me a bit more about that. What you know, I know it's a bunch of you, but what's the plan? Where you going
with
that?
Well, it really is the brainchild of Cliff Dufton, CJ Dufton, and John Ariane, Sunset Forge, my two buddies, not too far from us, that were the Mareko's buddies with two. And they're blacksmiths, and they had the opportunity.
Crazy talented.
Oh, I mean, it's like it's ridiculous. The two of them
it's
together,
ridiculous.
It's like it's a little bit absurd how talented. It's like they're also like the Laurel and Hardy of the blacksmithing world, but they're like super because they just yell at each other all the time. It's actually pretty humorous. But so they got asked. We got asked to do Maker's Faire. I kind of said it a couple of months ago, and then what they wanted to do is they invited me down to help, kind of like you know do it, you know talk, help escalate things and whatever. And he didn't want to call it Cliff Dufton. They didn't want to call it Sunset Forge. So they kind of create this kind of like a community of our friends. It's usually the guys who we do a hammer in with Jesse Savage and his wife Carrie and Rick Barter and Dave will be there. And so it's really just like this, I guess we're just like a collective. I don't like to say collective. I like to say a blacksmithing team. So we're, you know, it's fucking, I mean, pardon me, but it's crazy. It was such a huge success. And so we're, you know, we're like a blacksmithing team.
Nice.
Sounds like an Olympic team.
Well, it's
Olympic
better than a collective. A collective is like, I mean, all right.
Sounds like an ashram.
Yeah. No, yeah, you're absolutely right. So we're a blacksmithing team. So that's the end of that. But thank you for asking. I appreciate it. Follow those guys on Instagram. You can watch our things. And we talked about it on the last episode of the Blacksmith's Pub. John was telling you all about the Maker's Faire and Modern Forge. So blah, blah, blah. Cool. So I thought what I'd do for the questions this week is I would try to get more chefs involved. Because, you know, most of our listeners are cooks. Most of our listeners are knife makers. And I just thought it would be nice to hear from chefs in regards to what they like, what they don't like. A lot of times there's a lot of information that they don't know. So I thought what I'd do is I'd try to get some questions from cooks and chefs and stuff like that.
Good idea.
You know?
Because the three of us make culinary knives.
Right.
So, yeah, it makes perfect sense. First off, more of an audience that are cooks, chefs, people interested in food.
Right. And so at some point down the line, I mean, we're doing once a week and we could squeeze something in. I got some EDC guys who are just like, how come you don't do about EDC? So we might have to lump some in because, you know, there are people want to know.
Yep. Sure.
That's everyday carry for you culinary guys. All right. So the first question is from @_have_been_stopped. Have you been stopped? And he wrote, not quite a pro, but want to know how companies can make shit knives but still sell enough to not go bankrupt.
Do you think he's referring to like commercially manufactured stuff?
Generally speaking, yeah, I think so.
I think it's all, unfortunately, it's about the marketing and the branding for especially those big companies who, you know, when it comes to knives and different price points, you kind of get what you're paying for. And when you get a 20 knife block set from Marshalls or whatever, you're not necessarily getting the best steel. But I think it's they're leveraging branding. And it's unfortunate because I wish people would just focus on making great shit and that's it.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people don't know what a great knife is. They'll buy a knife or they'll be given a knife or maybe as a gift, as you say, quite often a block set. And, you know, they don't know the difference between a good knife and a bad knife. Most of my family members, their knives are terrible. They're not sharp, but they don't give it thought. We obsess over knives because it's our job, but they just pick something up, they use it, and they don't give it a second's thought, you know?
Well, can I take a different stab at it, which is funny that I say that, but I mean, I have a different opinion about it. I'm also of the mind of I'm not sentimental about all this stuff. And part of me thinks that, you know, people got to do whatever it takes. And a lot of times people don't think about, you know, no one's thinking about the steel. Like your everyday consumer is just like, I just got to cut my sandwiches for my kid, you know?
That's a good point. You were kind of making that point last week, essentially being like, you know, people need to or should be looking for something that's going to suit their life.
Right.
And that's a point that I wasn't getting during the podcast last week.
Well, I mean, that actually was part of when I did the Epicurious video. We had some long conversations in the beginning and I said to them, you know, the whole idea of those Epicurious videos was to say one is better than the other, and you have to just explain why one's better than the other. And I made it very clear that I'm not gonna tell the people watching that you have to spend more money on a knife just because I'm telling you to. I think that we also get, and I was like, and I'm not gonna, you know, shit on other companies. And I feel like, you know, when you start to tell people that they have to spend a lot of money on something, I'm not 100% sure that that's the right way to go. What do you think?
Yeah, I think people should make choices based on, you know, what's their budget look like? What can they afford? What's going to best suit their life? You know, like you were saying last week, you know, if you're cutting up all kinds of stuff and you got five kids running around, like you don't have the time to necessarily stop and take proper care of a knife or something like that. So you're going to probably want something that's more stainless steel. If you're going to want something that is also easier, kind of just more user-friendly, even like a European softer stainless steel, it's probably going to be more suitable for you because it's going to be easier for you to maintain yourself with the honing rod that's included in the knife block or whatever. I feel like what you're basically saying is like, you know, you should get the knives that suit you best for where you're at in your life.
Right. And I'm of the mind that if you're, you know, you're looking for a commuter car, you don't necessarily need a Ferrari. You know, I think that a lot of times, like when I talk to chefs, I have a couple friends of mine who are chefs in Peekskill. When I go to the kitchen, I talk to them. Actually, before I did the Epicurious video, I spent a lot of time with them. They're knife guys. And when I looked at their, you know, they have on a sheet rack, they have a tray. And on that tray is side towels. And on top of the side towels are their knives. And I look at their knives and most of them are not, you know, they're regular. They're Mac, you know, some of them are Mac knives. There's a couple of Wusthofs. There's a couple of Chinese, you know, Chinatown sushi knives. And then there's a couple of, you know, $300, $400 knives. But like I find that especially with like cooks, a lot of cooks aren't going to necessarily want to bring their, you know, Momasi Fire Arts integral knife to the kitchens because, you know, that thing's going to walk.
It's going to grow some legs.
I mean, that's what happens in kitchens. I mean, they tell you put. That's why they give you lockers. I mean, what you know, when you're an accountant, they don't give you a locker at your office. You know, they give you lockers at the kitchen because they don't trust these motherfuckers.
And I'd say for the home cook, the best knife is the knife of that they've got have in their hand. So
exactly.
Most people have a drawer full of old knives. Go through them. Throw out all of your old shitty knives. That way you're going to be forced to use your best knife each time.
Wow. That's some ashram thinking right there. That's some bringing it back. Holy cow. Carl Childs of Knife Talk. All right. I think that was a good answer. So let's go on to, and you know, you guys stop me if we've had enough and you know, I'm with you. All right. This is interesting. Nah, not that interesting. It's fine. All right. So at Eddie_AnyEddie281 writes, I dislike when my knife has a great shape but isn't sharp enough to cut meat without tearing it. Sad face emoji.
Sad face. Who's going
to
jump in?
Just needs to sharpen the knife, surely.
Yeah, I agree. Exactly. That's what I was going to. I was waiting for someone to say, like, wait a second. The guy's got to sharpen his knife.
Yeah. Well, and again, if you're looking for something that is going to hold a really fine edge and isn't going to have kind of the tear, like when you're looking at sushi knives, like the way the meat is cut, the fish is cut, whatever it is part of the actual presentation. You don't want a bunch of torn up fibers of meat through that. And so you want something that's going to be able to take a really fine edge. And while it may have the shape of what looks like a sushi knife, doesn't necessarily mean it's made from the kind of steel that's going to take a really great edge to offer the presentation that you want from a sushi knife.
But cutting raw meat is completely different than cutting vegetables.
Right.
You're when you're cutting meat, you're actually like releasing the tension, and it's like you almost only need you don't have to have a razor blade for raw meat, you know? That's why my first knife was a hunting knife, and he wanted a very thick knife with just a big bevel edge. And he just like when he's cutting open, he's field dressing the animal, he's just looking to score it and separate out the muscle. Right. And he's not, but I guess you're right. That's a big difference between that and sushi.
It's about getting work done versus presentation. I feel like he's leaning more to about the presentation side of things.
Yes.
And yeah, when it comes to prepping and you're breaking down proteins and portioning them out, like you don't need a really nice fine edge. There are plenty of edges that'll do that job. You could even use a serrated knife. But when it comes to the actual presentation, you need something, a type of steel that's going to take a fine edge, that's going to help with that presentation. And again, there are a lot of knives that look like sushi grade knives or really high quality grade knives, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to have the quality of steel that's going to be able to offer you that presentation when you're slicing the meat. But yeah, I mean, I think it comes down to the right tool for the job.
I think you make a good point when you talk about the difference between presentation and whether you're dealing with raw meat. I've got this beef, and we're going to talk more about beefs later. Not beef in a sense of meat, but beef as in something that really winds me up. And that
we got some beef, baby.
People who use these big, big sort of butcher's choppers, when they're just cutting meat or maybe even vegetables, they're going to have a completely different edge to what you need. So maybe he could be talking about something like that. You're saying it's not sharp enough to cut the meat without tearing it. Maybe he's using this big, big chopper.
Or he's using a knife upside down.
Possibly. And I know even in London, there's a big, very famous steak restaurant in London, and they give their diners a little cleaver to eat the steaks with. And it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. So
you got to post something up about that on the Instagram, because I need to know what you're talking about.
Yes, I don't want to embarrass them and say who they are, but I will get a picture and send across.
It just sounds very intriguing.
This could well be a case of him simply using the wrong knife, as you've already said.
I've been asked to make a kitchen axe, and I immediately said, go beat it. I'm not making anything like that. Go leave it alone. Go to the hardware store.
For the warrior chef.
Yeah. Leave me alone.
Hey, man. Can I ask you a question?
All right, baby. All right. So this goes from at off to Saigon. He says that he hates a non-rounded spine that digs into your hand. And I've heard this a lot.
I agree.
Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's just, especially, even if you buy a knife from a culinary store or something like that, or a retailer, whoever is a sharpener, even if you have a stone yourself, guess what? You can round off those spines if that's what you want. But I agree. I mean, as a, I guess a broken corners is what I commonly call them.
Exactly.
Is what is a standard, I think, now for most all custom makers. And I think some production manufacturers are starting to do that more too, because they're recognizing not only is it a trend, but it just makes more sense. You don't need to work that much harder or endure that much more, whatever, agony to get the work done. A lot of people pride their calluses. And you know what? Whether or not the spine's round or hard or hard-cornered, it's still going to give you a callus. So don't worry about that. But there's no need for it to be sharp. And anyway.
No. That's something. I actually made a knife a long time ago for a chef friend of mine. And I broke the corners like crazy, like almost made it like a radius spine. And he, it was like I had opened some sort of door to heaven to him. He was like, he's a chef for a long time. And he was just like, I couldn't believe that you could do that. And I was like, what are you out of your mind? Live a little, kid. I mean, geez Louise. But so I definitely break all the corners of the spine. 'Cause when you're in that pinch grip, you want to make sure you're not like, you know, cutting your hand up. But also I also do a big, do the same thing with the heel, because my knives generally don't have a big bolster, like a wide bolster, like a Wusthof does. So I make sure a friend of mine, a long, long time ago, I made a knife for a friend of mine, and he was just like, do you think you could do something with this heel? The heel's cutting into my hand. I was just like, oh yeah, I never even thought about that. And now I make sure that I make the spine and the heel, I break the corners, even if it's just a little bit, just enough so it's not like mental patient time.
Yeah. And with the spine, I mean, it doesn't have to be a big, big radius. I simply just use a Scotch-Brite belt and just take those edges off.
That's what
the tiniest little, makes a huge difference. And again, if you don't have access to somebody who can do that, you can do it yourself on a sharpening stone. But ideally, you have maybe if you have somebody that you take your knives to sharpen, that's also something they hopefully can do. But I also want to give some props to, I think, Mr. Bob Kramer is the one that might have led that, because I'd never seen that anywhere before. I mean, before I'd seen his work, and I'd never seen it in a commercial knife until after he was starting to do his commercially ran stuff, because that was one of the things he really insisted on when he was doing that.
Yeah, even now, you know, we buy a Wusthof knife, it still has those really crispy corners from off the machine.
Right.
That's usually what the last thing I do after hand sanding is I just clean up the spine and break those edges. And, you know, before I start to get ready for the handle, that's like usually the last thing I do.
For sure.
All right. So here is Hartman 1128. What type of knife would you recommend for someone just learning some knife techniques?
I mean, that's going to depend on what he uses knife for generally. If we're talking specifically kitchen knives, I'd say just get a, 5 to 7 inch chef's knife. And like we talked about last week, just buy a bag of onions or carrots and just dice, just julienne and just practice that way.
Yeah, I agree. I was going to say 8 inch chef's knife is kind of for at least Western style. It's kind of a standard length that I find a lot of people reaching for, because it's not so big that it's, I can't even think of the term. It's just, you know, overwhelming or people are afraid to use it. But it's also not so small that you're not getting as much work done as you would like in one pass. But yeah, I would say just an 8-inch chef's knife and whatever one is available, start practicing.
Yeah, 8-inch chef knives are good because they're good for your cutting board size. Overall, 8 inches isn't going to go flying off the side of your cutting board. And one thing that I've noticed, especially a few years ago, people don't have any idea of the lengths of knives. Like I would get a email from a guy who said, I want a 12-inch chef knife. And all I'm thinking like, You clearly don't realize that you don't know what you're talking about. Oh, no, I only use 12-inch chef knives. And I'm like, yo, That's like a machete. You ain't going to do it with a machete. You got to, you know, that's the tip to the heel. And I've always had a nothing but problems when people give me millimeters. I like a Gia. I like a 270, 244 millimeter. Ugh, now I got to break out that goddamn app where you transfer. What people don't like to say 5/16ths. They like to say millimeters. It's, oh, I hate that.
Hey, man. Can I ask you a question?
Jesus Christ. So I really wanted to bring up, I got a nice message from a friend of ours. His name is Mert Tansu of Tansu Knives. Mert makes incredible knives in Australia, and he's a dynamite guy. I met him at the Blade Show this past year, and he used to be a chef. So one thing that he said to me that he hates, and I thought this was interesting, was he says, okay, and he got angry. I had to make the comment a little bit tighter. Okay, one of my biggest arguments I kept getting in regards to carbon steel blades from fellow chefs was, when you use them, they look dirty, meaning they patina, and stainless look clean. In short, they can leave the stainless blade dirty longer. Is that even an advantage? I keep telling them to leave the industry because they don't have pride in the, or take care of your tools. So I got the feeling that what he was getting to was, if you're using a carbon steel knife, you're a little bit more, especially in a professional kitchen, you're a little bit more aware of your knife. But when you start to go with the stainless steel, you're getting sloppy. Like you're letting your stomach out a little bit because you know that you don't have to worry about the patina.
Right.
That's a weird one. Surely if you don't really care what your knife looks like so much, if you're in a production environment, you just need to do the job and you need to make sure it's clean and it's hygienic. If you're worried about the knife is looking,
I don't think he was worried. I think that he was basically saying that, you know, the mindset of the chef in a kitchen is keep your knife clean and it'll, you know, as long as you keep your knife clean, that's the most important thing. You're looking at, because you have to maintain your carbon steel knife, you have to constantly wipe it down and stuff like that. That means that you're kind of on top of your shit. And when you start to go into like, all right, well, I'm going to laze it up a little bit with the stainless steel. I don't have to worry about it like patinaing, and then the patina is going to, you know, it's going to show me what I've been doing all day. I think it was an ethics and purist thing of like, you know, stop being lazy, clean your knives. If you need something to be lazy about, beat it, get out of this industry.
Right. Well, I think that point is perfect. Like whether it's stainless or whether it's carbon, you got to keep, especially in a kitchen, like a professional kitchen, when you're not at home, you're working for a job, you got to keep that thing clean. And just because it's not showing that it's dirty or anything like a stainless would, you still got to be on top of it. Whether it's stainless or carbon, I think the advantage, like we kind of talked about with carbon last week, is just that it just holds its edge that much longer and that much better. But yeah, I mean, it does develop a patina, but I personally don't mind the patina. In fact, the patina is a good thing because developing a good patina over a week or a month or something like that, depending on how much use you're putting into it, it's going to get to a point where it pretty much kind of stops, unless you're working with some really aggressive food, like a super acidic, like a lemon or something like that. And if you leave stuff on it, but otherwise the patina kind of gets to a point where it just stops. And the performance advantage, especially in a production kitchen, and again, it comes back to like how it fits your life. If you got the time to take care of a carbon steel in your kitchen, get a carbon. But if you don't, you know, you're probably going to want to lean towards the stainless. But either way, you got to keep that thing clean.
Do you think there's something to people being nervous about carbon steel because they don't have control over what's going to happen? It sounds like you get this nice knife that's all clean and shiny, but in your mind you think, well, it's about to not get clean and shiny. And the fact that you don't have 100% control, you think it's a control issue, as in like, I don't really know what's going to happen. And right. You know, maybe that's something that makes things just like, all right, well, I just paid all this money for this and now it's got this big, you know, blue stain. And I just wonder if it's like this kind of like, you know, you're not prepared for that, the inevitableness and also the randomness.
Right. Well, and there are ways to either prevent the patina, which is like kind of going back in with some sort of super mild abrasive and brightening the knife back up. But that takes some time and some elbow grease. You can also use like a tsubaki oil or what's also known as Camilla oil, which is a Japanese type of Japanese manufactured oil that helps keep the patina down. But again, I really like the patina. But if you don't like the randomness of it, there are ways to actually force a patina by using mustard or other vinegar or other kind of like acidic food safe things to force a patina so that you have control over how that patina develops. And then once it's forced and it's on there, it again, just like building it up, it kind of doesn't really get affected unless you kind of get lazy with it and let acidic food or any kind of acidic whatever medium sit on the blade.
Yeah, and that was my question, whether you get customers asking for a forced patina, and if so, what you guys do. So I personally would use hot vinegar and just leave it in there for maybe 20, 25 minutes, and it comes out as a nice dark, dark blade. But generally, people want to put their own patina on anyway. So I'm just wondering, you know, what the feedback is with you guys, what people are asking for with you.
I never get anybody asking for forced patinas.
Really?
Right. No, not yet.
I never got asked to do a forced patina, but I once made a knife for a friend of mine, and I, you know, he was very specific. He wanted carbon steel, and I sent it to him, and then 24 hours after he received it, he sends me this picture, and it's covered in mustard. And this is before I knew what was going on. I was just like, what the fuck is this guy doing? And then next thing you know, he's just like, look at the forced patina I put on. And I was just like, all right, well, great. Congratulations. I was just like, I don't know what else? What are you doing? I it was like, I didn't really understand what he was doing. And I was just like, well, oh, it's great. Congratulations. And I was just shaking my head like, you're a mental patient, but you know, it's fine. Go ahead.
I like it. I've seen some good forced patinas. Bloodroot
for
blades.
Sure.
David and Luke down there in Jesus, where are they? Atlanta or in Georgia, east of Atlanta. They do a lot of forced patina on their blades, and they do multiple layers. And it's crazy how it builds up, and it has like some depth to it. It looks really cool. But I've also seen some really bad ones too. And ultimately, like, what's fun about the carbon steel is that there's more interaction with it. Like, you can kind of customize it yourself, especially if you're playing with forced patinas and stuff like that, or just kind of letting it do its thing. I liken it to driving a stick shift versus an automatic, carbon versus stainless.
Marengo's notes to a new knife maker.
So am I being electrocuted in that, or what's going on? Is that a Halloween theme? Is it going to change?
Not sure what it is. Not sure.
I can't wait to hear what happens when Easter comes. all right. So this week for notes to a young knife maker, I wanted to add on a couple notes that I didn't get to last week, just because I forgot to. But the respirator I was referring to, because we were talking about PPE, is a quick latch. It's a 3M quick latch. You can find it on Amazon I looked it up actually yesterday. It was like $16. So if you have access to Amazon and they'll send it to you, I highly advise those. The earbuds. I get a lot of people asking me about the earbuds that I use. They double as hearing protection. You can listen to stuff through them, but you don't need to. But they're memory foam, and they really block out the sound really well. The brand is Pfizer, and we're not getting sponsored by any of these or anything. These are just what I found that work best for me. And they're also on the Instagram, the Knife Talk Instagram. But it's the Pfizer BHS, which is Bluetooth headset, 750s. And they're really great. They're inexpensive, and they do a really good job blocking out noise. And then my face mask, I just use a cheap face mask from Harbor Freight.
Real quick about the ear protection. One thing I've been doing for a long time is I got back in the day, I used to get the ear muffs that had a radio in them. And then I realized that you can get on Amazon, you can get these tiny little it's for your car. Like if you don't have Bluetooth, obviously some cars don't have Bluetooth, so you can actually sling. Right. You can listen to something based on the radio station. Like you plug it into your whatever, and then you can play through the radio station. Well, those work also on your radio. So if you have one of those little guys, you can actually plug it in, and then you can sling whatever you're listening to earphones that have the radio. But I also have the ones. I just got a pair of the Bluetooth, the 3M Bluetooth, and I love them. Mm. I love over the ears. Yeah. I usually, those old little ones you stick in your ears, they always end up in my pockets, and they always end up in the washing machine. So I suck at that.
Well, and what's nice about the Bluetooth ones I use, they have little magnetic pieces on the back of the earbuds, so you can sling it around your neck and it sticks right there. It's not going to fall off unless you're doing something crazy. And so, yeah, they stay. I've never had an issue with them falling off or feeling like I had to throw them in my pocket. Right. But yeah, over ear, I play back and forth kind of between over ear and inner ear, because sometimes, like, when I'm wearing inner ears, they feel like my skull's being crushed from the inside out.
Right.
But then the opposite's true with over ears sometimes. So I have to go back and forth between them.
Just whatever you do, don't do that stupid thing where you stick your earbuds in your ears and then put the earmuffs on top of them. That's like the worst. I mean, I used to do that, and I was like, my ears would hurt, my head would hurt, and it was just like idiotic, totally idiotic. Don't do that.
I did try that once.
It sucks.
I didn't like it. It did suck. Okay, so this week's Notes to a Young Knife Maker, and I know I've been calling him Notes to a Young Knife Maker, but it's really anybody who's just getting into knife making. But one of the things I find a lot, especially since Forge and Fire has helped bring kind of smithing and knife making to the forefront of kind of popular culture and stuff like that, is it's easy to romanticize. Same way, like, competitive cooking shows have made chefing look super sexy and really cool, but people forget that it's a lot of hard work. So that's something to really think about, especially when you're getting into. I mean, I say, you know, if you're interested, definitely try it out, especially if you don't know what you're doing with yourself and you just want to try it out. Give it a go. Give it a good old, whatever, college try, your best college try. But, you know, the reality is that, you know, designing stuff like Jeff, you do the watercolors and there's a back and forth with the designer or the person you're working with. And then, so that's awesome. Having a finished product is really awesome. But like the work in between is really hard, and it's easy, especially like getting to the last little bits of the hand sanding and stuff like that, to want to fudge it just to get through it, because it kind of sucks. Unless you're like a super masochist and you love doing all the hard stuff, it sucks. But the thing to keep in mind is, like, you have to be good at all the little incremental steps so that you finish with a quality product. And if you just don't have the temperament and the mindset to be able to do that, you know, maybe it's not for you. But I feel like this got really negative all of a sudden.
Well, people need to do whatever it takes.
Yeah.
You know, to be happy in life. Yeah.
So I guess my main point is to keep in mind, like, there is a lot of hard work that's involved in making really well-made handmade knives. And again, it's just like pretty much anything. It's easy to romanticize until you get in it and start getting your hands dirty. But if you can get through that and you find that it is actually something that you love doing, the community is awesome. Meeting and getting to know other people, the constant challenges of the work is really great. Especially when it comes to working with customers, and sometimes they request stuff that you never would have thought of trying or to attempt or anything like that. And it's really pushed me, like this integral, bolster Saya that I did. It's something I kind of had thought about for a long time. And finally I had somebody recently say, I want that. I want a Saya that covers the integral bolster because I want the grain to flow perfectly or as close to perfect between the handle and the Saya. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to try to figure this out. Otherwise, you know, who knows how much longer I would have put that off. And now it's done. It exists in the world now. And so it's definitely rewarding, but it's also a lot of hard work.
Well, I think that one thing that you're touching upon is one of the differences between you and I, which is I think that you're a destination person. That means that you're looking to get to the destination versus what I am, a journey person. Like, I enjoy the whole process down the way. And when I say that, I'm not talking about the process of one knife, but the process of being someone who's making something and learning along the way. I think that kind of idea of growth every, you know, iteration of something that you're doing is what makes life worth living. I think that if you're just worried about going into a, you know, you want to be a black belt as soon as you walk into the martial arts place, I think that you're losing sight of the, you know, the beauty of, you know, life is about this journey. It isn't about the destination. Because if you get to the end and it's the destination, maybe it's toes up. It's time to go in the ground. You know,
you spent way too much time with Carl. Way too much time with
Carl. I love that guy. He's got me centered. He's got me centered. I'm just saying that, like, I'm totally like a journey guy. Like, I enjoy, you know, constantly learning. And it's interesting that you said what you said, because I see this with a lot of young blacksmiths, where they're doing these projects, and it's almost like they're becoming blacksmiths. They're following a recipe, as opposed to understanding how you're hitting, understanding, you know, the feeling. It's that 10,000 hours of kind of knowing what the steel feels like when you're hitting it, or how hot it should be. And it's not necessarily about following a recipe. It's more about kind of getting a feeling of what you're doing and kind of growing. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I think if you're doing the same thing every day, you're not growing. So myself personally, I have the steak knife range. They're pretty much the same. It's almost a product, and I can just get them out. They're the same every time. But it's the custom work that I find interesting. And as you say, you're always growing doing the custom stuff. You're always taking different requests, and it's just more fun. It's just more fun.
Yeah.
So. Well, I change my design. I mean, sometimes I'm constantly changing the way I do things. Like, my knives have evolved because I'll see something that I'll like, or like I had a woman who wanted a smaller handle because she got smaller hands, and I started making the handles a little smaller, and then I started realizing, you know what, I like that better. So I'm constantly, like, my designs are evolving to the point where you understand where they came from, but it's a constant growth. My knives today from my knives from 6 months ago are different. They're better now.
Right.
I've got a story. You just mentioned about you made a knife for maybe a lady who had smaller hands.
Right.
And 6 or 7 years ago when I started making knives, I was like, man, I need a name. I can't just be, you know, this is Craig who makes knives. So I'm trying to think of cool names. I'm thinking short names for domains. I'm thinking of the marketing later down the line, that kind of thing. So I had this list, and Chop Knives was on the list, just Chop. And I'm just like, man, I'm never going to get that domain. So you have a look. It was registered to somebody, but they weren't using it. There was no website. There was no social media presence. You couldn't get hold of what were Chop Knives at the time. So I managed to find the owner of the domain, and I sent him an email and just said, look, you don't seem to be using it. Is this something I could purchase from you, and that kind of thing? And he said that he'd always dreamt, he'd made the odd knife, but he'd always dreamt of setting up a company making knives specifically for women because they had smaller handles. And I thought that was just crazy and bizarre, but they never got around to it. It was him and his brother. But he was a nice guy. He gave me the domain and the Instagram handles and everything. It was all brand new. None of it had been used. And he gave it all to me for free. He said, look, I just haven't had the time. I haven't got around to this.
Well, that was really nice of him.
It was very nice of him. But yeah, that was his original idea, to have a company just making knives for females, which is
it's a choking demographic. It's really
sounds too narrow.
Yes, that's the word I was looking for. It's a very sort of narrow field where, you know, 50% of your audience has gone out the window already. But I'm very glad it didn't work out for him, because I've got the name and I love the name.
Good.
That's a good one.
Well, and don't get me wrong. I guess it sounds like I hate knife making. I only like the beginning and the end. But you do make a good point, Jeff, about constantly learning, and that's definitely one of the things that I really appreciate, especially about hand. Like, I just learned recently, like, I've been using some sort of 3M sandpaper, and I just started using the RhinoWet. And it is day and night.
I can't believe it's taken you so long.
It's taken me 5 years. I'm so such an idiot. And I've had, you know, I've watched Nick Wheeler's videos, and I've talked to other makers who love it and swear by it. And I'm just like, oh, I've been using this other stuff and it works. But the amount of work, like, it's just unnecessarily slogging through the hand sanding. Instead of it taking forever, it can be that much more of a joy and pleasure, because one, you're getting the work done, but you're getting it done in a more timely fashion. and just learning stuff like that, like my handle sculpting. Every time I do the faceted Western, I'm learning something different about how to control the belt so I can get the facets properly. Or when I'm grinding a blade, I'm constantly playing with grinding a blade. And every aspect, it's, I guess my biggest thing to try to get through to people is not to think that it's just like everybody's running around with in fields of flowers and rainbows when they're knife making. It's hard work, but it's fulfilling work. And especially if you love digging into each and every part of the process, there it can be an endless education and always an opportunity for greater fulfillment through the work.
But the reason why people think that it's so easy is because they watch videos that are like 15 to 20 minutes and they think, oh, I can do that. They don't realize that it takes, you know, it could take 20, 30 right. hours to make a knife. You know, they
Forged and Fire, the whole 6 hour format.
Right. Right. It's strange. And I just wanted to say, Craig, you've got to get us a sponsorship with Rhino-It. I will give them the best commercial they have ever had. Down there in Portugal, we got to do something because I spend like I got $600 of Rhino-It on my shop table right now.
Jeez,
love that stuff.
Well, you know, I can't get it here in France. And just in the forums this week, Sandy put up a post asking, does anybody know where they can get it in the UK? So if there's any European distributors out there, get in touch. We all want some Rhino-It.
But it's crazy. It's made in Portugal.
Yeah, we just can't get it here. I think it's shipped straight on a boat to the US.
Oh my God.
So Craig, do you not have any at all?
None at all. None at all.
Oh, Jeff, I know what you're sending along with those tongs.
Yeah, but you know what? Then he's going to be, but you have to use sandpaper like it doesn't cost anything. He's going to be like parsing it out like some sort of, you know, London, you know, liver during the Blitz. He's going to be rationing off his Rhino-It. That's no way to
live. Dude,
it's no way to live.
It's crazy. This stainless steel Wootz knife that I'm working on right now, even though it is incredibly wear resistant and one of the hardest blades I've ever had to hand sand out, I took it up to 1200 grit and I didn't use more than 4 pieces per grit. At 400 grit, I used, I think, 4 or 5 little pieces of sandpaper. And then once I got that all laid out, then 600, 800, 1000, 1200 were all easy peasy, like 2 pieces of sandpaper each side. Yeah. Two little tiny, what is it, like 7/8 by 3-inch pieces of strips of paper. I do a weird thing when I hand sand. Maybe I'll post that up. But I use my hand sanding stick. I use spray adhesive. I hate wasting sandpaper myself. And I know you say use it like it doesn't cost anything, but I hate wasting it. And so I cut it down into little strips and I spray adhesive them to a stick that I use for my hand sanding. That way every single piece of surface area on that sandpaper gets used before I throw it away.
Yeah, I usually cut them into 2-inch strips. And I have a 2-inch sanding strip, and I wrap them around, and I'm just rotating it on the stick. So there's no waste on my end. I'm with you.
Good.
I'm with you.
But I'm using, like Mareko, Mareko was until recently, I'm using 3M paper. And, you know, I buy these standard sort of letter size sheets, you know, A4, whatever you want to call them.
Right.
Again, break them down to 2-inch strips. But I must be going through 5 or 6 sheets. Whoa. Per grit, you know, as I'm making my way up, it can take hours and hours. So, man, Rhino-It, get yourself a base in Europe where you can distribute from.
This morning before we podcast, I went and I'm working on this, I don't know, they call it a Tsukihiki, or I don't know what the hell it's called, that long, a long knife.
Tsukihiki.
Right, that's what it's called. And I went off the disc grinder with 220. Oh no, I went off the disc grinder with 120, and then I started hand sanding at 220, and I one sheet of Rhino-It, I changed the scratch pattern. One full sheet? Yes.
One full sheet?
Yes. With ease. Maybe even half a sheet. Maybe it was half a sheet.
Okay.
But like two two-inch strips. I changed the pattern. Half a sheet. I use one sheet for both sides.
Yeah.
Well, Rhino-It, get in touch.
Come on, Rhino-It.
Whilst we're talking about
Come on, baby.
Sponsors, let's talk about Soul Ceramics. I know a few people within the forum have contacted them. They're ordering ovens, even heat ovens, using the discount code, which is Knife Talk, which is great. But for those who don't know about it, Soul Ceramics, they're a even heat distributor based in New York. They've got the best prices, bar none. Best prices. But on top of these amazing prices, you can also get another $50 off by going to soulceramics.com/knifetalk. Knife Talk is the promo code that you need. And just as an example, the LB18, which I think, Jeff, have you got the LB18?
Yes, sir.
He has. List price of them is just under $2,000, $1,965. From Soul Ceramics, you get it for $1,571 plus the extra $50 off. And so it's 25% discount off the list price.
Just real quick on the LB series doesn't have coils in the back. So if you're making culinary knives, you can put a longer knife in without worrying about the tip being too close to the coils. I love, if you're making culinary knives, the LB18 is awesome because now only the heat's coming from the sides.
Yeah. And again, somebody in the forum was asking about that this week.
I love it.
You guys got the fancy style. I got the KF Set Pro. Pretty kind of on the more basic end of the controllers. The thing still works great, though. I have the 22 and a half inch.
Yeah, that's what I have. That's what I have, yeah.
Can I add to what Mareko's saying? He also is in a shop with four Forge and Fire champions, and they all got Paragon ovens, and there is a wall of four championship Paragon ovens. They all got all these ovens. They don't even know what to do with it. They don't even know who to use first. You're all right.
It's like a pizza store.
It's like crazy. It's like they're stacked on top of each other. Like they don't know what to do with them all.
Well, but the thing I love about the heat, the even heat, is
there you go.
They heat up so quick, so much quicker. The Paragon takes like 2 hours, and the even heat, it comes up, at least from my experience, comes up way quicker. It only takes a couple minutes once it comes up to temperature to stabilize a little bit, and then you put your knives in, you're good to go. But yeah, I think the even heat, and the other thing about Soul Ceramics, so I was looking around, poking around on their website, they're totally committed to getting the lowest price to people. So if you somehow happen to find, like, they do have really crazy low prices for the even heats, but if you somehow find a price somewhere else, they'll do a price match, and then they'll probably still going to do that $50 on top of that.
We'll see.
So yeah, but it's, you probably don't really need to look anywhere else, though. They really do have, I did some poking around myself back and forth between a few different distributors, and from what it looks like, they do have the best prices.
There you go.
Soul Ceramics. Soul Ceramics on Instagram and soulceramics.com.
Craig's Community Showcase.
Man, I love these jingles.
Sounds like you like them too much.
You do a good job with them.
Good. So we've got a community showcase this week, and I literally changed this morning because Jeff pointed me in the direction of this young maker. It's Paul Pinto. Paul Pinto 1124 on Instagram. Amazing stuff. He's 18. He's from Fairfield in Connecticut. He's been doing a lot of woodworking and metalwork sort of fabrication over the past maybe 4 or 5 years, but only blacksmithing for about a year and a half. And he's only made a handful of knives. And if you go and have a look at his Instagram, which is Paul Pinto 1124, you'll see this progression. So I was looking at the dates of these knives that he'd made. So just in February, he's making these sort of hunter knives, EDC knives, that kind of thing. And they're good, but geez, the latest knife he's put up, the chef knife, and it's this integral, and he's got the Damascus flowing lovely from the bolster. Beautiful, beautiful stuff. He's only 18, and what he's doing is just incredible. He's got a great YouTube channel as well, which I think is, well, if you go to his Instagram, Paul Pinto 1124, you will have a link there to all his stuff. But go check it out. This guy is,
yeah, I
gotta
check that out.
Yeah, he's incredible. A beast. He listens to our podcast. He likes Knife Talk. He's a good guy.
Yeah, good to hear.
Well, obviously he's a good guy if he likes the podcast.
I know some bad guys who listen to our podcast too. So fine.
So that's this week's community showcase.
Oh yeah, I just pulled him up. Look at that. That's a good looking knife. He's not far from me, too. I should try to get him to come up to the shop.
That's it. Well, there you go. Connections are made. Every podcast.
Paul, Come up to the shop. Dragon's Breath Forge.
Hey, man. Can I ask you a question?
I don't think I like him better. I don't think I like him better than Jay-Z. I think I like Jay-Z better.
Good. Jay-Z was snappier.
Hey, man, can I ask you a question?
Yeah, that one's better. That one's better. That one's better.
I got a question for you, Craig. What do you got coming up this week that you're excited about or nervous about? Same for you, Jeff.
I've just had a really very nice inquiry from a restaurant, and we talked about this briefly a couple of weeks ago when I was sort of pitching the work to them, but that's come through. So I'll be doing some resin handled steak knives, and they actually want to use vegetables from their garden within the handle. So I've been doing a fair bit of research on this, and it's possible. It requires stabilizing and lots of other little things. So we're going to be using a wooden liner, so just a 3 mil slither of wood as a liner against the tang. There's going to be almost like a bolster both sides, so at the butt end and the further end of the handle. In the middle,
a metal bolster or wood?
It's going to be
okay,
wood.
It's going to be all wood. Okay.
Basically, the reason they are there is so the pins can go in without having to be able to see the pins through the resin.
Sure.
So there'll be this resin float in the middle, and there they're going to have their seasonal vegetables. So they're going to have a set of knives for each season, each showing different vegetables.
That sounds cool.
Yeah, it's something very new for me, so that's really exciting. So there's been lots of research going on. I've still got lots to do. So, that's going to take up a lot of this week. So I'm pretty pumped for that.
I'm excited for you. I can't wait to see that.
Very cool.
Jeff, what do you got going on?
I'm in, like, production mode. I'm trying to finish the Cuban knives. I want to get them out the first week of November. So Carl is finished sanding the knives, and I'm prepping the handles so we can put all 36 together. I'm hoping to put all 36 together this week, and then I want to start carving by the end of next week, on the end of this coming week. So I want to get them out the door. I want to get these things. I got to get my life back together. And we're
carving. What do you mean carving? Shaping the handles?
Well, I mean, shaping. I call it carving.
Okay.
So shaping the handles. Okay. Yeah, I go big, and then I did a little different. So. And then my business partner and I were talking about some things we're going to be doing in the future, which is exciting and nervous making, and we're just trying to get ahead of the business instead of just kind of reacting all the time. So after Christmas, we're gonna change the way we're gonna take a little break and try to focus on doing more retail stuff versus I hate being on my back foot with customers, and I hate being on the back foot, and I want to have stuff available. So we're going to start implementing this new program where I'm going to be doing 2 weeks of custom work and then 2 weeks of work for the shop. So we're going to be blackening, doing some blackout days in our future.
Right.
So I can be more efficient in terms of working on custom stuff, but also working on stuff that we can sell directly from the website.
Yep.
So it's nervous making. It's a little nervous making, but it's at the same time, it's like, we've been for the past, 3 years, all we've been doing is, you're on your back foot and fielding stuff, and you don't have stuff, available, and you need to fix that.
Yep.
Tony's on that.
Mareko, what about yourself? What's coming up this week?
I got to finish this damn knife and get it out. I got some interesting patterns I'm going to be playing with. So I get back in the forge and under the hammers and start forging out some new mosaic patterns. I have a customer that is just really wanting me to just let loose and do whatever, essentially, and try to create the craziest, coolest work that I've ever done. So there's a little pressure. I feel a little pressure when it comes to that. There's kind of, when it comes to the custom orders, there's a little bit of freedom in the restrictions when customers say, I want this particular profile, I want this particular such and such and so on. You don't have to really think about the build. But when it comes to, I struggle when I'm building something for somebody else, but it's something that I want. I don't know. I struggle with that. If I'm just building it for fun, that's a totally different question. But if somebody's going to be buying it, then I'm like,
ooh, are they going to like it? I don't know.
Pressure.
And I
have pressure, yeah.
But that's the artist's mind. You know, the funny thing is when you're making, when you're, and I hate to say that we're artists. I really, someday we're going to talk about the difference between an artist.
I hate that.
I hate it. I hate it and I hate it. But I will say when I was a sculptor and I was making my own work, I was more, you know, you feel more vulnerable to criticism because it's in your mind, you think it's a criticism of your decision making, as opposed to when you do a commission, when I would do commission sculpture and it would be sculpture that, you know, they wanted a bird, specific bird, and I'd do it, I'd be like, all right, well, that's what the goddamn bird looks like, as opposed to this is my interpretation of what I'm doing. You're a little bit more vulnerable in that position because you mentally think that you're being judged based on your decisions.
Yeah, that's probably it.
Well, there you go.
Okay, we're going to wrap up soon. There's a couple of things to talk about, and we do have one more item, a new item, which we're going to do each week. But first of all, I want to tell you about the Knife Talk t-shirts. They're now available.
Yeah. Yes.
Free international shipping. And it's the new brand. It's the new branded Knife Talk stuff on there. They're available from chopknives.com. I say free international shipping. That's going to be for a limited time. So get your orders in. They come in.
Yeah, get in now.
A very sexy black and an even more sexy moonlight navy.
Have mercy. I'm ready for. I'm an XL. I'm an XL. Just to let you know. If anybody wants to buy me one,
I'm an XL.
I'm sure we can sort. We can sort some out for you guys.
All right.
But we've got a new section coming up.
Oh.
Wait, you got to play that again. I missed it.
You got to guess what's been said at the end, and extra points if you guess where I've taken the audio from.
Where's the beef?
Well, that's my generation. That's where's the beef? That was the that old commercial where that old lady used to be angry that she'd open up the burger pat. I think it was McDonald's or Burger King and
Wendy's. It's Wendy's.
It was Wendy's.
Apparently so.
Wendy's.
So.
Where's the beef?
From the
it was from Wendy's? I don't think it was Wendy's.
Well, I think they're saying, what's your beef, as opposed to where's the beef.
But, so the original one was where's the beef, and it was, that's fine. Whatever. I love it. All right, so what's your beef?
My beef. My beef this week, and I've spent so much time looking for remote controls. Those tiny, tiny remote control. Apple TV have a tiny one. My Amazon box has a tiny, tiny remote control. And I'm fed up of pulling off all of the cushions from the sofas, from the chairs, looking for these bloody remotes. So, I mean, they spend billions and billions on research. Apple will spend billions on design research for these things. I think they all live in these like ultra-modern apartments where everything's just, you know, completely modernist and they've got no comfort. But if you've got a cushion in your house, that's where your Apple TV remote is going to be. So,
did you find it?
I did. But they've been winding me up this week. That's my beef. And I think we need this little section each week as a little therapy.
Yeah,
a little bitching and moaning.
A little bitching and
moaning. Did you find it in the fridge when you were getting a beer out?
Well, you know, my wife's heavily, heavily pregnant at the moment. And she talks about baby brain, where she's forgetting things. But I'm getting the symptoms too. My belly's gone bigger.
It's a real thing.
I'm forgetting things.
I gained weight when my wife was pregnant. I got sympathy weight for sure.
Oh yeah.
I got
so
that
Jeff.
Where's the beef?
Well, as you probably would imagine, I have a lot of beef. But I have professional beef and I have personal beef. And today I'm gonna go with personal beef. So I think that I've established that what I like to do in the mornings and the evenings is I like to walk my dogs. And the reason why, well, you have to walk your dogs, but the one thing is that's where I clear my mind. That's where I kind of like in the morning, I kind of envision what I have to do for the day. I give myself short-term and long-term goals. So the walking the dogs for me has been very important. So one evening this week, I was walking the dogs and I got a call from my buddy Jesse Savage, who is the host of the Blacksmith's Pub with Rick Barter. And now I can announce that they interviewed Jesse James of West Coast Choppers and Jesse James Cutlery. And they had a great interview with him. And I helped write some of the questions and they had awesome. It was great. I was talking to him and I put my phone in my pocket and I was walking the dogs. And this son of a bitch in the park let his dog loose. And it was this big, stupid brown dog.
And here's the problem. This is my beef. My beef is people think that their dogs are so fucking smart and they're so great. But what happens is when they see, and I don't want to hear from Jonathan Porter. I don't at mention me, and you're going to send me a Doghouse Forge. You're going to send me all these messages. Just leave it alone. Just listen to me and leave it alone. You have a great dog. These people think that their dogs are so goddamn smart. But the problem is I don't think my dogs are that smart. So what happens is these dogs come crashing through, and then my dog starts screaming on the leash, and they're afraid on the leash. Then their dog starts getting mad, and then what happens is the guy tries to call his dog back, but it's, you can tell I'm getting angry because the dog's not coming, and then all of a sudden my dogs start barking at each other, and then the little one starts biting, and then they're all around me, and all I can say to this goddamn fucker is, what the fuck am I supposed to do here? You gotta put your dog on the goddamn leash. So my put your dog on the goddamn leash. I don't know what to tell you. You're a grown up. You're a grown man. You shouldn't be dealing with this. You shouldn't be putting your fucking dog in my life. I don't want your dog in my life. I barely want my dogs in my life. Leave me alone. I'm trying to have this incredible. I'm trying to figure something out here, and you're fucking me up with your fucking dogs. Leave me alone. There's my beef. You wanted to be.
And relax.
Yeah, that was a crescendo right there. That shit was
so serenity now.
I'm getting mad right now.
But I think Mareko is too polite to have a beef, but let's see.
Where's the beef?
I got lots of beefs. I keep it tight. But this week's beef.
First beef.
I can't think. I need more coffee. First beef. Inaugural beef. There are all these great handle material purveyors online. I'm not going to call anybody out because they kind of all do this shit and it drives me nuts. They have the scales split because you have to split them, especially for a full tang knife. Go on either side of the knife. Great. But when they display the scales, they're showing the book match, the cut. The cut was made down the middle of the block. Then they open it up and they're like, oh, cool. There's this mirror image of this pattern. But what drives me fucking crazy is that ends up on the inside. Why the fuck are you showing me that when that's going to end up against the tang? If a lot of people have different approaches. I've had people say, oh, just put those on the outside. And here's the problem. I do a lot of contouring on my handles. And anytime you start grinding through the material, it's going to start changing the way that presents. And so I always have the middle where the cut was against the tang. So when you're looking at the spine or the belly, the grain flows seamlessly or almost seamlessly straight from one side into the other. But the problem, the thing that drives me bonkers about looking around at all of these, because it's misleading, is that they show the inside of the handle instead of the outside of the handle, which is going to end up being seen.
I show the inside. Finally that figured out what you were saying. So what they're showing you when they bookmatch them together, that's the inside of the goddamn wood. That would make me furious.
They all do it. And I'm sorry, I'm like probably blasting out the microphone. They all do it. And I'm like, what are you doing? Stop showing me that. Show me the outside, the side, the part of the handle that's going to be viewed by everybody who touches it or looks at it. You're showing me the inside. That's completely worthless and pointless to me because that's going to be hidden. That's going to be closed up. It's going to have glue and tang all stuck to it. It doesn't matter. I want to see the outside of the handle.
You're getting me mad.
I think that's it. We're going to end on this really negative point this week.
Thanks, everybody. Oh, I feel so much better, though. I think it's a good note to end on.
Well,
finally got that out.
Fine.
Yeah, we'll all have a good weekend. We're all calm and zen and Carl-like.
Yeah.
Gotta love him. He just sent me a text while we were recording. He sent me a very nice little text. He took a picture of the knife he was sanding, and he says, I just wanted you to see the picture of the nice hand-sanded knife I did. He just sent it to me just now. Love that kid.
We all love Carl. We all love yeah.
Fucking
we all
Carl.
Need a Carl. We all need a Carl.
We all need a Carl, and you can't have mine.
Reminder of the forum at forum.knifetalk.net. Reminder that t-shirts are on sale from chopknives.com. Reminder of a discount from Soul Ceramics on an even heat, is soulceramics.com/knifetalk. any questions you have for us next week? We may well have a very different kind of show next week.
All right, don't say anything else. Let's keep your mouth shut. Let them live on that one.
Yeah, live on that one.
It's still a
live
fresh show. We're still working things out, so who knows what's going to happen.
Well, I think that ultimately every episode is getting better and better, and we're working on our chemistry, and we're working it out, and I think it's going well. That's what I think. Yeah. I have no beef with this show. No beef.
Let us know what you like about the show, what you don't like about the show, and, you know, ultimately we're doing this for you guys, the listeners.
Yeah, so what's your beef?
If we can make it better, we'll be trying our hardest.
Yeah, what's your beef, you fuckers? Let's hear it. You know?
Should we finish on that?
Yeah.
What's your beef, you fuckers?
Yeah. Bye-bye, you fuckers!
Oh, don't forget to subscribe.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.